So, Rohit, where do you see social media heading?
Well, I think what we're finding is that much of social media is heading in the direction of being integrated into other types of media. So, for example, you see mainstream publications, whether it's magazines or whether it's newspapers, either starting their own blogs, having journalists that are writing columns, also blogging. And also you see a lot of these publications even featuring responses from blogs. So it's not necessarily just about creating their own blogs. It's about injecting the conversation that's already taking place around the media that they're putting out. And that's another form of social media.
And I agree with that. I mean, I definitely see that as well. I think, it is a bit of an antidote for some of the offline media to get into more online media and to create ad sales that are related to that to sort of, cushion the blow of, declining ad revenues that they may be experiencing in the offline sense. So,
Right.
do you have any view on where you see the connection between social media and overlaying that with PR? I mean, where are those two lines intersecting in your mind?
I think it's been really interesting to see the adoption of social media, thinking in the context of agencies, obviously, because I'm working in one, but also in terms of marketing departments versus PR departments at a lot of client companies. And this question that everybody has consistently asked at a lot of events that I've been at, as well as in discussions, which is who should social media, where should it belong? Who should it sit with? Is it a marketing activity? Is it a communications activity? Is it a corporate communications activity? A lot of times those groups are different. And I think that the short answer has been that in a lot of organizations, it's really belonging with the person who's most passionate about it and is taking it to the next level. I think with a lot of PR companies and PR groups, it's been a natural shift simply because a lot of PR activity is focused on influencers, finding influencers, contacting them, getting them to review something, talk about something, share their knowledge of something with a larger group of audience. And if you think about it in the influencer context, blogs are essentially about finding these influencers in a different way and engaging them in a different way because they have their own voice through their own blogs.
I agree, and I see, within my organization and even people who approach me as well, that they're struggling for how to get it funded. Meaning, who, like you said, who owns it, and who's going to own it, and who's most passionate about it? Because somehow, some of these, social media tools are seen as interactive, and therefore the interactive group should pay for it, or they are, close to PR, and PR should pay for it, or corporate comm should pay for it. So, it's an interesting, line where we're trying to figure out, and others are trying to figure out how to fund some of these experiments. Because it's one thing to say, hey, let's shift a couple of dollars and let's start a blog, or let's do a couple of podcasts, and those are let's say not institutional dollars. They're just sort of slush fund dollars that are sitting on the side. But then when you go to re-up your budget in the next year and you go, okay, hey, wait a minute, this is something we want to reinvest in. We want to do a whole podcast series that's going to cost X amount of dollars. Then it starts to look a little bit different, and people go, wait a minute, shouldn't Interactive be paying for that, or someone else be paying for that?
Yeah, I think that is a common question. Where does the funding come from? And I think that to a degree, it's been a little bit easier to answer simply because a lot of social media can be done without huge capital investments. And I think because of that, the real question has not so much been who's going to fund this massive site, because it's not like we're creating a huge e-commerce site. There's platforms and tools out there to launch blogs on a very small budget. I think the question is rather whose responsibility is this going to be? Whose job are we going to make this part of? And is it an add-on to somebody's job that they're already doing, which I think we can all kind of assume is probably not going to work as well simply because people don't have the time to do it if they have a full plate of other activities that are considered their job. And if we make it part of someone's job and reduce their workload, there's a very real resourcing question there, which is, do we hire more people? Do we hire a company blogger or somebody to take this project on? Those are the sorts of challenges I think a lot of organizations are dealing with.
Right. Now, changing direction just a little bit, one of your posts that I really liked was on the concept of social media and the optimization of social media, much like search engine optimization, but for the social media, which I thought was brilliant. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
What do you think, or how do you think people can best prepare for social media optimization?
I think that the idea of social media optimization was a really interesting one because, like you mentioned, it really did take off and resonate with people. And I think that was for two reasons. I think the first reason was because it had a good acronym associated with it. And from a purely marketing context, people could really latch on to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that aside, the substance of it was a different idea that related to a well-established idea. And the reason why it was different, and a lot of people kind of said, there was this initial reaction that, oh, okay, social media optimization, isn't that just search engine optimization for social media? Isn't it kind of the same thing, is what a lot of people were saying. And I think that the only difference really is that when you talk about optimizing for search engines, you're really talking about optimizing so that you appear highly on a search result on Google or Yahoo. And when you talk about optimizing for social media, you talk about optimizing your content so that people can save it and pass it on to others. So it's really more in a word-of-mouth context than it is in a search engine context. So if you optimize your content for social media, for example, that means that you include easy ways for people to save it onto social bookmarking sites like Delicious. You offer simple ways for people to email it to other people. You offer easy ways for people to post it onto a site like dig.com. These are all big traffic drivers, and these are all ways of optimizing your content that doesn't necessarily have to do anything with search engines. Obviously, it relates. The more places that are linking, the higher you get on search results. It all kind of feeds into itself. But the idea in itself is that there are simple ways that you can actually optimize your content so that it's more likely to travel.
Right. Another one of your posts, more recent, as of in the last couple of days, has been about short-term blogging. You know, isn't that somewhat of an oxymoron, and kind of what do you mean by that? I was a little confused when I saw the title.
Yeah, I think it's that's been a really interesting challenge for us because of the way that people are starting to treat blogging, which is that blogs are destinations. And when you create this destination, you have this long-term relationship with your customers. And what we're finding in a lot of cases is that there are very real situations where that might not be the best way to use a blog. And I think that in order to get into this conversation, you really have to see blogs not in themselves as destinations, but rather as one communications tool. And just as you can launch websites for a company that are long-term, that offer the brand, and that have a lasting presence, as well as websites that are short-term around events or perhaps around campaigns that stay up for a set amount of time and then come down, I think blogs can be used in that way as well. What I tried to set up in the post was, if you are thinking of doing that, there are some very real considerations. For example, you need to make sure that people understand that the relationship they're building to this site is a short-term one, not a long-term one. You need to make sure that people know what to expect from it and what it's leading up to. Usually, in our experience, at least of doing these short-term blogs, either for events or around marketing-related campaigns for clients, the blogs stay up for a short amount of time, but there's a lot of activity in that short amount of time. So it's kind of like a sprint rather than a marathon. And treating it as such helps you to get a lot of benefit out of it without unduly leading people down a path of assuming that this is always going to be around and then all of a sudden turning the switch off.
So what tips would you advise for folks who are just getting started with social media? This is a question that I get, you know, probably on my blog every week or so. I'm sure you probably get this as well.
Yep.
What are your like top 10 or top 5 kind of tips?
Well, I think what most people would tell you who've either been blogging for some time or been helping clients or anyone else to understand blogs is that the number one thing to do is start reading blogs, because nothing will give you as good of an understanding of what blogs are all about as actually getting in there and reading them. So one of the things that that our digital influence team at Ogilvy put together about 2 years ago, when we continually had this question from clients and really wanted to help clients to understand what was out there, is we created something that we called the Ogilvy blog feeds. And what those are essentially the same thing that you can get if you go into a neighborhood bookstore and right on the front shelf you have a list of what the staff is reading,
mm-hmm.
and the books that they recommend you read. It's exactly that for blogs, but we've categorized them. So right now we have about 20 different categories online at specific URLs, feeds.ogilvypr.com/whatever the category is. So, for example, we have one feed set up for marketing. We have another one set up for pharmaceutical blogs. We have another one set up for mommy bloggers. And these are all different categories that we send to our clients to say, oh, you're interested in bloggers in this category, or you want to see what's available in this category, go here. And the real power of that has been that we didn't just provide a list of links and have people have to click off in multiple places. We actually brought the RSS feeds straight into a single page. So now you can get all the headlines from one page. You get an experience of how RSS works, which is obviously another big question for people who are not familiar with blogs or not familiar with social media. And you give them a nice introduction to what blog content is all about and how it works in a visual way that they can actually relate to, bookmark, share with other people. And it's been a really successful way of giving people that first experience with reading blogs.
Right. And I think that's a great idea because, you know, sort of the number one rule is to, you know, before you start blogging is to start listening. And, you know, most people just kind of don't know where to go to sort of start listening. They start on Technorati or they're, you know, fiddling around. If you've got these pre-designed feeds, which I think are great, I'm going to check them out myself. I think that sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I think it's been really successful for us as a first introduction. So people have really, we've gotten some great feedback about it.
Cool. So, you know, I know you were talking about books, and I understand from a recent post of yours that you're going to be doing your own book. So can you give us a little indication of what that's about?
Yeah, it's actually really exciting for me because it's my first marketing book. Though I had to do a thesis several years ago, which was pretty lengthy, it never actually turned into anything published. So I'm expecting this to be a much better experience, because nobody's really holding it over my head that I have to do it. And that's one reason why I think it'll be a lot more enjoyable. But the idea behind the book, we haven't done a formal title or timeline or anything like that yet. It's very very new, but the deal is with McGraw-Hill, and it's to create a book that is about marketing and authenticity and the idea of personality. And I think that a lot of authenticity from companies, and this is a big mantra that you'll hear from a lot of people, comes from having a personality. And I think one of the words that's been overused, and I actually just had a conversation about this with several bloggers last night, was transparency. And the idea that giving up your secrets and being transparent about everything is the ultimate end goal. And I think that paying too much attention to that is probably unrealistic because, number one, you're never going to be able to be completely transparent and give away everything because this is a business context and you have competitors, and that's a very real concern. But at the same time, being transparent and just saying that this is what we do is not necessarily beneficial if what you're doing is wrong. So I think that being authentic and having a personality is much more important for a company to have an identity, to create that identity and to foster brand evangelists, which is ultimately what all of our clients want to do. They want to find the people who are most passionate about their product, about their service, about their brand, and they want those people to tell as many other people as possible. That's what influence is about. That's the power of marketing. That's what everybody wants to get to with social media.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I couldn't agree more. I just finished the book Naked Conversations by Robert Scoble and Shel Israel, and they talk a lot about that whole concept of being authentic, and I think that that's a, you know, very good start for anyone who's considering doing a blog. I also was interviewing Malcolm Gladwell.
I was listening to that. That was great.
Yeah, and you know, he said, the quote that I liked the best from him was where he said that he's most influenced by the people that he knows and respects and trusts, and that, you know, if you're looking to sell software, he has a person that he, you know, listens to, which is his brother, that if you want to sell him software, if his brother isn't aware of it, it's not on his radar, and you're never going to get through to him because anyone else he doesn't know, he doesn't respect, and he doesn't trust. So, you know, that it's an interesting influencer relationship, which is kind of cool coming from him, naturally, because of the tipping point. That sort of, you know, really lays out that situation of influencers and mavens and connectors, and how do you get to people like that?
Yeah, and the interesting thing was the immediate reaction I had to that was that it's very true for all of us, but I think what's interesting about it is that trusted evaluation and that trusted opinion is not just coming from people that I know anymore for me. Because, for example, there might be a product or something that I'm looking to buy where nobody in my family really knows anything about it, and none of my friends really know anything about it. But if I go to Amazon and I read 10 reviews, and all 10 say that a certain product is great, or all 10 say that a certain product is bad, that's very influential for me.
That's true.
None of these people are people that I know, but this is more of that wisdom of the crowd idea, that if everybody had the same experience, I assume that that's true, and I have a high level of trust in that. And in fact, that might even counter one person's experience. If my brother told me something was great, and these 10 people on Amazon said it was not,
yeah,
I might not believe my brother. I might actually go with the 10 people.
That's right.
Because they all had the same experience, and perhaps, you know, he had a different experience, or something else was going on, or, you know, maybe I just, you know, don't think he's that believable.
Right, or maybe on that particular topic, you're like, all right, well, he doesn't know this particular aspect of software, but I trust these other people, and therefore...
Yeah, exactly. So it's very interesting, because now trust is not segmented into people that you have a physical relationship with. Trust can be something that's virtual and that's created virtually. And I think that a great example of that is the rise of eBay and this idea that trust can be boiled down into a star rating. And that if somebody has a certain star rating, you're likely to trust that when you send them your money, they're going to send you back what you purchased from them.
Right.
And that's a very interesting manifestation of trust.
Kind of reminds me of something that appeared in a podcast that I did a couple of weeks ago with Sean O'Driscoll, who runs Microsoft's communities, right? He said, and I still can't get this out of my head, so Sean, thank you very much for putting that in there, but the idea of, he said, I know the contents of every web page on the web. It's a pretty bold statement. And he says, you know, if I go to the Nikon website, it's going to say that this camera is a good camera, it does, you know, good things, it takes photographs, it soaks fast, it does, you know, it's fine, and it's all marketing speak. He goes, but I really don't care about that. I want to know what was the experience that people had with it. I don't speak marketing speak. I don't speak shutter speed. I don't think along those particular lines. And people have to kind of get away from that and allow folks the ability to post their ideas and their experience with their individual products so that you could, again, get up the curve, as you were saying, about the eBay example or even the Amazon example, you know, with your brother on software that... You know, hey, maybe this is a better, they've had better experiences and they know this one particular product a little bit better than my brother does. Well, Rohit, I really appreciate your time. Maybe you want to give the audience your blog information so if they're interested in checking out your book, they have an idea of where to go.
Sure, yeah. You can either Google my name and you'll get right to my blog. The blog is called Influential Marketing, and the URL is www.influentialmarketingblog.com.
Excellent. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.